live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Meow. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, wheels, time, games, thrones, squids, games, and kitty cats. My name is Dan Selke, and I'm the editor of winterscoming.net, and you are Daniel Roman. You're the other editor of winterscoming.net. And what we're going to talk about on Take the Black, the winterscoming.net weekly Wednesday podcast today.
Well, today we are pondering the all-important question for all of our people in the chat, viewers and listeners and whoever. Would you watch Game of Thrones if it were cats? Cats, Game of Thrones. No, we're not going to talk about that. But we were talking about that. And I want to know your opinions if you would watch that crossover. But in reality, we do have lots of stuff to talk about today. We have some small updates from Westeros. We have some less thoughts about the Wheel of Time to go through because Jeff Bezos, why are you dragging your feet on that? And then we have to talk about a bunch of shows and movies and stuff that are out right now, like Andor, like Sinners, like The Last of Us, like who knows whatever else. Dan, you are raising your hand as though we are in a classroom. What's up?
I just want to say, Michael Morrow asks, why does Andor hate us incels? Michael, between now and we talk about it, I want you to expound on that. what do you mean? Because I am genuinely curious.
Yes. And are you self-identifying? That must be sarcasm. I want your raw, unbridled thoughts. And also, if you would watch Game of Thrones, Cats Edition. Okay. Anyway, let's stop in Westeros. It's been kind of a slow week in Westeros, but we do still have a few cool updates to share with everyone. So first off, we have this picture that Abubakar Salim, who plays Alan of Hull, he tweeted this out on the Twitter. It's his part of his outfit from House of the Dragon season 3. Ooh, what do you think this he's filming in this scene, Dan?
It's cool. It's Alan of Hull's Valyrian seahorse armor. He'll film it during the Battle of the Gullet. Armor on a ship. I don't know if that's the best idea I've ever heard. I think there is actually a scene in...
It's a demonstrably bad idea, I think, in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, do you recall that scene? The scene in A Feast for Crows or one of the later books.
Oh, yeah.
Where Victarion like knocks a guy who's wearing armor off a ship. And he just sinks like a stone, which is a fun idea.
Yeah, totally.
So careful, Alan.
Well, maybe that armor's made of leather. It's hard to tell from this picture. Could it be boiled leather? But yeah, that is kind of a funny thing. I do think about that sometimes with the ornate armor on ships, because you know, George R. R. Martin did make a point of discussing that, but also Victarion knocked a guy in. So some people do it to their own detriment. Yes.
Sorry, Matthew has the best comments. Matthew, I want more information. He says, I haven't had sex Andor hates us incels. What do you mean? Do you mean that there's too much sex on Andor and it's offending you? I want to know more. Please tell me more. And we'll get to it later.
We haven't even gotten to the Andor part of this show yet. We'll get there eventually. It's going to be, this is just the thread running through Andor, running through our show. All about Andor today. Anyway, so that's what's up in House of the Dragonland. We've also got something from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So according to the spies over at Redanian Intelligence, which is a Witcher scoop site that just has people on the ground in England spying on all of the productions going on there, I guess. Apparently, Jon Snow's stand-in from the final two seasons of Game of Thrones, his name is Conan Arryn, has a role in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So he's playing Gawyn Baratheon, who is the third son of the Laughing Storm, Lord Lionel Baratheon, who is very much he's the Robert Baratheon of this story. He's kind of a big, jolly, but warrior type of dude, and this is his youngest son. And fun fact for Gawyn, he eventually, way after the series, marries a Lannister, Tia Lannister, and it's the last time a Baratheon and Lannister wed before Robert and Cersei. So now the more you know.
Yes, it's cool that there's a Game of Thrones stand-in, Jon Snow, being in the show, having a role, speaking role, hopefully. He looks like he's trying out for Grease. He's got a good look. I'm looking forward to seeing him. I can see him as a Baratheon easily. I am loving the Matthew conversation. Matthew, I do know what an incel is, involuntary celibate. What I want to know is, what is the connection between the TV show Star Wars Andor and the involuntary celibate community? I want to know specifics. Just think about that while we talk for a while. And Leo asked, when's a potential trailer release for Knights of Kingdoms? We actually did hear about that.
We did.
Something coming in like May the 14th-ish. Oh, yeah, at the HBO Upfronts.
Yes.
I might be wrong on the day, but like in the next couple of weeks, that's our very informed guess.
Yeah, I think there's... So I assume, Leo, you've heard this rumor kind of from the way you phrased that question. And I think it will probably pan out because House of the Dragon debuted trailers at upfronts in the past. And also, we're just kind of due for one from HBO, like The Last of Us.
Yeah,
we are. The Last of Us is in, you know, the thick of its season. It's coming up on the halfway point of its season. And A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is kind of like the next big show on HBO's docket. So they presume, you've got to assume they're going to start rolling out marketing material before The Last of Us is finished. And people are like, well, I guess I'll cancel my Max subscription because I don't know if there's anything else coming down the line. You know, David Zaslav's got his thumb on that trigger ready to launch the trailer onto YouTube. So yeah, we'll see. But moving on from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, we have one more little bit of Westeros news. And yes, Benjack says May 25th is the finale of The Last of Us, so could align with that. I assume they're going to want a trailer out, if not by then, before then, so that they can be running something Knight of the Seven Kingdoms related before The Last of Us, or in an ad for it or something.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
Anyway, next on our tour of Westeros is the video game sphere. So the Game of Thrones King's Road video game finally has a release date. It's May 21st, which is right around that time. If there's a trailer for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, maybe they can cross market or something. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, maybe.
So, Dan, my question for you and for all of you in the chat, are you excited for this game? It looks pretty cool. No. Okay. That was a very quick no. I didn't even get to give my whole spiel. So now you got to tell me why.
Look, I like video games. I'm a bit of an old school gamer. If you have microtransactions in a game, I know it's standard now. I just don't touch it. I just don't see a reason to. Yeah. If it's like a free to play, if I have to, which what this is, if it's like you can give me a dollar to get your horse some armor or something or whatever they do in there, if there's like an in-game currency I have to use money to buy them in exchange for weapons or missions, I just don't do it. I know that video games, that's the way they kind of are now, a lot of games, and I'm just throw up my hands and say, have fun. I will play some independent games and some of the bigger releases that don't have any of that stuff, and that's what I'll do. The game does look fun. It looks ambitious, but it's for mobile and PC and has microtransactions, so I'm not going to do it. Before you answer, I'm sorry, I have to keep this up. Matthew is so fascinating.
Okay.
The word incel, according to Matthew, does not mean a voluntary celibate. Okay, Matthew, then what does it mean? What does it mean to you? I'm so curious.
Producer Richard has linked the Wikipedia in chat. So if you're listening to this on audio, I guess you're missing out on the exciting chat today. So go find us.
We're
going
to go to the bottom of it. What do you think of the game?
Yes. By the time we actually talk about Andor, we'll get to the bottom of it. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Leo says the fact that it's not even on PS5/Xbox is concerning. Obviously agree with that. This is a mobile optimized game first that is also rolling out on Steam because it is presumably fairly easy to do that. Whereas consoles, it's a whole different thing to optimize for their hardware and all that sort of stuff. The team behind, I think it's Netmarble, the team behind Game of Thrones King's Road has already said that they are tweaking some of their monetization things because fans really didn't like it after the beta came out. And I dug into this a little bit, and it's not just you can buy stuff, right? Because a lot of games have, options where you can buy extra skins or extra trinkets or whatever. Like, that's a fairly standard feature in a lot of games. I don't really begrudge games that. What I read about Game of Thrones King's Road is that you have like a stamina bar that limits how much you can do in one sitting. It gets like reboosted every day or however often you log in. And essentially, people were getting their actual amount of playtime capped off. So you had to like buy more tokens or whatever to keep playing because games
redo your stamina.
Yes, exactly. To re-up your stamina so you can explore new places, so you can pick up loot. They make it so they like lock loot behind spending some of the stamina points. So this is my understanding, is it was limiting people's play time on it, which that is a hardcore like mobile thing to do. Like console games don't do that.
Sure.
So yeah, presumably that's all part of why it's not on consoles. But yeah, I'm in the same camp. I wish this game well. It looks like probably the best Game of Thrones game we've ever gotten. But yeah, obviously I'm with the general consensus here that the mobile aspect turns me off.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're altering the monetization options, but the monetization options still boil down to you have to pay to get stamina to play the game, that is full rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic energy. It's like, who cares if you alter it? It's still a really, really bad system. And okay, some other great comments I have to hit on. I'm so excited by this conversation. Yes.
Okay.
First of all, a real one. Ben Jack pointed the Gilded Age is coming to HBO Sunday night soon, which is a big deal. People do love that show. And the It Prequel Show, which I think looks pretty good.
Yeah, Welcome to Derry.
Yeah.
I assume that'll be later in the year. Do we think that's coming before Dunkin' Egg?
I don't know.
Okay.
And so like two prequels to big properties. HBO's is trying it. And finally, to Matthew, I just want to ask, if incel does not mean involuntary celibate, I would love to know from you what you think it means so we can discuss it further. Okay, what's next on the agenda, Daniel?
Yeah, and Robert Harris in the chat says, the game just doesn't look good and the dialogue sounds goofy. And I do agree that it sounds a little goofy, but also we're just starving for a good Game of Thrones game at this point. So part of me is also like, but it is nice to see Westeros in a video game.
It is.
Anyway. Moving on from Westeros, because we do have a lot else to talk about today, let's talk a little bit about Amazon's big fantasy show that just wrapped up its third season a few weeks ago, Wheel of Time.
What about it?
Dan, you and I both enjoyed this show quite a lot. It seems like critics enjoyed it a lot. It seems like audiences enjoyed it a lot. It seems like people who loathed the first season, a lot of them came around on this one because it was just a better season of television. Their grudges weathered under the elements. I don't know. It was more accurate to the books, which it is a little bit. All these reasons, it made a lot of good waves. However, Jeff Bezos and Amazon and Sony, because this is a co-production, have yet to renew it. How are you feeling about this, Dan? Should we be worried? We're like 2 weeks out. And I kind of just wanted to talk a little bit about where we're at with the Wheel of Time, how the fandom is reacting to it, and kind of just the state of television, because you have to think a few years ago, Amazon probably would have been all over this given the season this just had. So what do you think?
I think we should be a little worried. I feel like it will pull through. I feel like the buzz has been too good. The viewership has been too strong. And I feel like I want to see it very badly. You know, part of the reason why we've been talking about it so much and why we've enjoyed it so much is because in addition to being a good show, it's also fun to have like an underdog to support. Because it is this show that is on the bubble that deserves to have more seasons. And it just makes me feel like a champion of the downtrodden to promote the Wheel of Time whenever I can. So I do.
Yeah.
You're completely right that TV has shifted because of COVID, because of the strikes, because of just normal inertia or entropy.
Yeah, the streaming bubble's kind of bursting, I think, a little bit.
What TV shows are doing now is different what they were doing in 2020, 2019, when Game of Thrones was ending and they were still high, trying to like spend as much money as they could on anything to pull in that size of audience. The enthusiasm is cooled. The market conditions have changed. I think Rafe Judkins has said that not everybody is really interested in investing in like a really long running series like the Wheel of Time would have to be anymore. They chose Amazon because it would do that. And yes. I think they would. And I think they should. And I think they probably will at least give it another season and do it on a case by case basis. The best thing to do would be to give it many seasons right now. I don't know if they'll do that. I also want to say Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, they took like months to renew that.
Yeah.
And they did, which is something you can tell yourself in the wee hours of the night when you're worried about this. The sooner the better, though. I also wonder if Red Eagle, the company that is the rights holder for some of the Wheel of Time screen stuff, is, I don't know, angling for more money in negotiations. That's pure speculation on my part.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, rights holders involved here. There's Amazon, there's Sony, there's Red Eagle, who are making their own epic Wheel of Time RPG. I'm sure that'll come around just in any second now.
Yeah.
So I hope it goes through. I don't know what else to really say. I think it's, there's reason to be worried, but not that much. And I'm still hopeful.
Yeah.
Also, before you respond, I'm just going to update this. I'm pretty sure Matthew's trolling us here.
Spicy in the chat.
Because how could you not? I'm pretty sure being trolled here. You know, Matthew Morrow, Philosopher King, says that incel doesn't mean involuntary celibate. It means someone who can't get laid. I think that's close enough. So we'll talk about more when we get to Andor. Go on, Daniel.
I am with producer Richard here in the chat. I am still waiting for the connection this has to Andor, the show we are going to talk about eventually, very late in this podcast. But yeah, I agree with, you know, all the stuff you said about kind of, I don't think we necessarily need to be worried. I think you're right. That's a good reminder that the Rings of Power took like a few months, and like we had a few false starts of like fan sites being like, it's officially renewed. And then, you know, it hadn't actually been announced that it was renewed. So kind of people kept backtracking, and finally, eventually Amazon renewed it. And I think an important thing to note there is that we know that work was happening on the series. Like, it wasn't filming, but there was work being done while they were waiting for that renewal. It sounds like they had almost a gentleman's agreement, if you will, that Rings of Power was probably going to move forward and they shouldn't like go on vacation for 6 months. But they were waiting for the official green light. I am hoping Wheel of Time's in kind of a similar place where they're not sending everyone off to, you know, possibly get roped into other contracts, because actors, crew, writers, they all need work. And that there's just a lot of, you know, things to figure out in terms of more seasons or tying people down for a longer amount of time. Even if they just renew season four, like making sure they have their option clauses or whatever all in line so that they can more seamlessly roll forward from here. I think, but we do know that, you know, the fans are very eager for this because a bunch of them have launched an appreciation-based fan campaign to, gently pressure Amazon and Jeff Bezos and Sony into renewing the Wheel of Time. The website is renewwatt.com. And this is from one of the organizers. This is a quote, which is, "We know renewals depend on a lot of factors, and maybe it just hasn't been announced yet. By showing the studios how much we appreciate the show and want more, we are either validating a decision already made or giving them a helpful nudge." They do have a petition you can sign at renewwatt.com. And yeah, I mean, any hype for the show can only help Jeff Bezos know in his heart of hearts that this is a show he could get behind, because, you know, Amazon really wanted its own Game of Thrones, and it's like, you kind of have the closest thing you're gonna get, but do you know what to do with it? That's kind of the place we're in right now.
Victor says the show isn't moving any needles. I will say we might be a little biased. I will say the fan community is extremely, not only loud, but very positive. There's not a lot of toxicity I see around Wheel of Time. So it's a very nice place to be around. I think that counts as a needle. It's moving the critics' needles.
Yeah, I think that's hard to gauge, Victor. I think, you know, to some extent, we all have different circles of people in our lives who discuss television and whatever. But I do think we've seen some significant indicators that it is moving at least a few needles. Yeah. It's by far the highest rated season of the series on Rotten Tomatoes, on IMDb, which you may not care about, I may not care about, but we do know that studios do care about stuff like Rotten Tomatoes numbers. It has consistently ranked very highly for Amazon and their like top shows in lots of countries all over the world, which we know global reach is kind of a big priority for Amazon. I think what Rafe Judkins is the showrunner, about Amazon being a good partner for this because they wanted to invest in a long-term series, is true because like they built a whole studio, Jordan Studios in Prague, for this series. Like they have put a lot behind it. I'm just hoping they don't get cold feet, essentially, now that it's going well. And yeah, Victor says, but regular folks, none are talking about it. I'm in nerd circles and I'm the only one talking about it. And yeah, that's, I think maybe that's true. We need a wider, you know, range of data probably for this. But I do think the expectation that Wheel of Time would ever blow up in the same way as Game of Thrones, not really gonna happen in my opinion, because it's just not that type of shit. Like Game of Thrones, we talked about this in a previous episode. It appeals to people who don't just like fantasy. Sports people, people who like political dramas, all those sorts of
baseball.
People. Well, you know, finding teams to get behind, and Game of Thrones had houses you could get behind. There were elements to it that appealed kind of broadly, and Wheel of Time is a fantasy people's fantasy show. So we'll see. The jury is out. The last question I wanted to lob at you, Dan, about this is, if gods forbid the Dark One prevails and Amazon doesn't renew the Wheel of Time, do you think another studio would save it?
It's a hard question to answer because I don't have a time machine or the ability to peer into the future. I don't know. Don't know. I mean, Apple TV seems to love throwing money at things that aren't widely watched. Maybe they'd do it.
They were my first thought, you know, because presumably if any studio was going to save Wheel of Time, they'd have to like buy that whole big fancy studio Amazon made that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And like, who would have the money for that? Well, Apple, because they make, you know, television shows with their pocket change. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with that. We have our ear to the ground for any Wheel of Time news. Hopefully soon we hear something.
There's some good comments out there. None from Matthew, though. Still waiting on that insult definition. But talking about how there's not a ton of talk. And someone said they wouldn't recommend it to an average person and they love it. I don't know. The third season convinced me that I would I wouldn't have before. I think with that third season, at least to my more nerdy friends, I would definitely get on it and recommend it to them. I wouldn't have a problem with that anymore. I think it's nice. I don't know what that means, but what else? I mean, the marketing could be better. And I will admit, maybe I just feel like I'm hearing people talking about it because we're all in our own little internet bubbles and my feed is full of folk talking about it because I've trained it to be that way. That's a fun little side effect of 2025 war we're living in.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we can really get out.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And as the builder says, the show convinced me to start a 14-book-long series. No show's ever motivated to do that. People are seriously missing out. Game of Thrones didn't feel like a fantasy to me. I have heard the books are selling better. I don't know.
Yes,
I think there are good indicators. I don't think it's not moving any needles. I just hope it's moving the needles enough.
Yeah, totally. I think it's pretty clear from the trajectory of the show that if it goes on, it's only going to get better. So hopefully it gets that chance because some of the, you know, we talked about this maybe last week about Wheel of Time needing like a Red Wedding moment in terms of something that really ignites the popular culture conversation. And I know that there are at least one or two of those that maybe not Red Weddings because, you know, the Red Wedding was specifically designed to shock people. Like that was kind of Martin's whole thing with it. Wheel of Time doesn't really have that, but it does have a few really big showstoppers coming up in the next two seasons if it gets to continue. So, fingers crossed, Jeff Bezos, since we know you listen to our podcast, please consider renewing the Wheel of Time so that we can watch it. Shall we move on and talk about all the other things, maybe Andor eventually, finally, that we are watching? What do you think, Dan?
Let's discuss Star Wars Incels, aka Andor.
All right. You want to, do you want to dive straight into Andor? Or do you want to talk about the other? Okay. Let's talk about one other thing first that I think I had loaded higher on our outline for today's show.
Okay.
Which is a movie that is out right now that both you and I have seen, which is Sinners, the new vampire movie from Ryan Coogler. Dan, you saw this over the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. What'd you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I liked it. I didn't like fall madly in love with it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was dramatic. I liked the way they did the vampires, these blithering hayseed backwoods yokel southern vampires with their guitars and their folk songs. I like the red eyes. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And okay, this is something else where there's like the movie and then there's the narrative element around the movie. I think I might like the second one more, where there's this fight where Sinners is this original studio movie, not based on anything, not part of a franchise, that is having a ton of success. And I love that for it. And there was a pushback there where some industry rags, I think it was Variety, was kind of talking about the box office haul, which was very substantive and impressive, in a negative way. Something like, it made $60 million, but it'll need more to make back its money. And yeah. Like, why aren't we encouraging this kind of originality and cheerleading it when it does really well? And it is doing really well. Horror is always bankable, no matter the age that we're living in, no matter what kind of people are around. People will always go to see horror. Yeah. I think it was set in an interesting place and time, had some cool things on its mind. Yeah, I just liked it.
Yeah, I thought so. I loved Sinners. I thought it was a really excellent movie. And it's nice to see, it is a horror movie. It is a vampire movie, but it's also like a bit deeper of a film than just that in terms of the questions it's asking about Black ownership. It's kind of set in this period of the Jim Crow era in the South, where these two brothers played by Michael B. Jordan want to open a juke joint. And there are kind of these elements of the freedom to be able to do that for them as Black Americans in this milieu is just constantly being taken away. And I think it's interesting because I agree with you about the meta narrative to this. I almost think that is Sinners as a movie I loved. I also really liked what it did with music and kind of this idea.
Music
of these,
was very cool. Yeah.
The music was very cool. I didn't realize that there's a cameo near the end where it kind of plays with the timeline a little bit. That's an actual blues guy who I didn't know that. I thought that was super cool that they got to come do this movie. And he basically was like, I did it for the love of the blues, to keep the blues alive. And it's like, hell yeah, man, I could respect that. But so the meta narrative, I think, is interesting because you're right. Variety, a bunch of different outlets kind of had these really weird off-putting headlines when Sinners came out. And the 60 million one, like Ben Stiller called it out. He was like, in what world does a $60 million opening for a, original IP movie warrant this kind of headline of, oh, it won't make back the other 30 million in its budget or whatever. Like, what a joke. It's been out 2 days. but there has been some interesting kind of discussion about this because did you hear it or read anything about Ryan Coogler's deal for this movie with Warner Brothers, Dan?
Yeah, something that he will get the rights to the film within 25 years or something.
Exactly.
Getting more than a lot of directors would. And the theory was that are these articles like industry plant things trying to discourage these kind of movies and these kind of deals moving past? Which I don't know if that's all reasonable or if we all have tinfoil hats on and we just can't see ourselves.
Yeah.
But it's fun to talk about.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think they're all industry plans, but I do think there is. For me, part of this was like the writers and actors strikes. the writers and actors strikes. That was kind of eye-opening for me in terms of studios putting pressure on trade magazines based out of LA, like The Hollywood Reporter and Variety, in terms of their framing, because there was a lot of framing around the strikes that was like, oh, these sound like very, like the studio executives wanted things spun this way. And they had to backtrack and rescind stuff. And they kind of have done that with Sinners. They got pushed back and then they've had a bunch of very positive coverage since. So I personally, I kind of am in that camp because there have been some interviews with like executives who shall remain nameless because they did it anonymously. They didn't want to be named, who basically were like, if this deal encourages other directors, it's the end of the studio system as we know it, because it's very rare for a studio to give the rights to a movie back to a creator. Like Quentin Tarantino gets this sort of deal, and really like almost no one else. Like the thing is that studios' entire business model revolves around building a back catalog. The flip side of this meta narrative is Sinners is doing like ridiculously well at the box office. Its very, very second well. Weekend, it only had a drop of like 6%, which is like the last movie that opened with more than 40 million that had that small of a drop was James Cameron's Avatar in 2009. So this is matching a record in terms of sales drop for Avatar, and it's already made back its budget. I think it's up to something like 160 globally as of last weekend. Sinners is an excellent movie, and it's nice to see people flocking to see it. The theater I went to was almost sold out, and I'm in like rural upstate New York. I was very surprised.
I love anything that gets folk excited about go to the movies, especially that isn't a kind of major social event. Like we've seen success at the movies lately when something beyond the movies catches on
and there's this,
and it becomes some kind of shtick. Barbie, where everyone wears pink, which by the way is cool and fine, go do it,
But that's not what this is about.
Or
this
like is Barbenheimer, you got to go do it both. But yeah, it's nice to see this. Okay, it's a good movie, people are going to see the movie to see the good movie. I like that a lot.
So one thing I liked about this too is that you can just feel watching this that it's the kind of movie that brought really good performances and artistry out of the people working on it. Like all the actors were kind of on their A game. I feel like people are hungry for that sort of thing. So like it's cool to see the response to this movie, and you know, we'll be back watching Marvel before we know it. But for now, it's nice to have a movie like Sinners.
Yeah, this Friday. But before we go on, hello, Julie. Good to see you. The Originals is a cool spinoff of The Vampire Diaries. Glad you're enjoying it. Carol asked, any news about the Wheel of Time Extended? Not yet, Carol, but we are all holding our breath and crossing our fingers.
Yes, we are.
Can we talk about incels?
If we're gonna, I guess. Sure. Yeah, so we still don't know what that comment even has to do with Andor, right?
I have a guess. Okay.
It's got to be Wars Cyril Andor. Karn, right?
Yeah, who, by the way, is my favorite. I love Cyril Karn.
He's the best part of the recent episodes that just dropped last night, I think.
He's the best part of the last episodes. I loved his awkward dinner with his mother and his girlfriend, whatever they are to each other.
Dedra Miro.
Yeah, I love his frustrated kind of all these feelings shoved down deep inside him, but can't break through the icy wall. I just think he's great. I love. So the recent plot is that he's like trying to spy on rebel groups for the Empire because he's such a stupid softy on the inside. He might actually get converted for real.
Yeah,
I just love him. I think he's the best.
And yeah.
He's not an incel because he might be sleeping with Deidre, but maybe not. Honestly, it's hard to tell.
Just got to turn off the lights first. I thought that was a fun. There are so many fun moments with Cyril and Deidre. It's kind of almost interesting because not like they're the comedic relief, but their plotline it's like lighter compared to all the rebels who are like, and like Cassian Andor and Bix are suffering right now.
Yes, they are.
You know, Mon Mothma, not in a great place. Luthen Rael kind of feels like he's on the ropes a little bit. Things are getting really dicey. The rebellion is really picking up speed. Meanwhile, you have Cyril and Deidre who are like, happily working undercover on Gorman, where they're probably going to try to destabilize and genocide a planet for the rare minerals in the planet's crust or whatever.
Like, have minerals.
Whew, it's a lot. It's a lot, Andor. We also, this week's episodes had Forrest Whitaker as Saw Gerrera.
He came back. He's good.
He had some pretty wild monologues and scenes. And, you know, Forrest Whitaker he's an incredible actor. So, really, really great to see him back on the show, even if I did have a moment where I was like, what the actual hell is going on? In retrospect, I've read a few articles about it. I'm like, okay, this is real cool. But I still felt like, am I the one on drugs watching this? Because some of his monologues are so crazy. but also very, very deep once you actually like internalize them a little bit.
He is an unstable, compelling gentleman. I love Victor.
Yes.
Victor brings the puns. Incel block 1138. Like, that's a dense joke. Wasn't George Lucas' first movie like TXR 1138 or something?
Wait, what?
Look it up.
Look it up. I don't know.
I'm taking time out of our podcast.
Okay.
I'm on dead air.
Thank you. Thank you, producer Richard.
Thank you. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I enjoy the show. And I had another really great point about it that I've completely left my head because of this pun joke. I've got
one to ask you.
Go ahead.
So I heard your voice in my head, Dan, as I watched these most recent episodes, because you said something after the first ones dropped, which was basically that you've been really enjoying Andor. It's interesting, though, that it's almost so far removed from what you expect from Star Wars that it almost feels weird. Do you remember saying that? You said something like that last week.
I remember saying exactly this.
Okay. I thought about that a lot watching these episodes, the most recent ones. And I've seen 4 and 5. I haven't seen 6. And I feel like that's so on point. Because Andor is an excellent show. Full stop, no question. This is excellent television. It's really incredible artistry from Tony Gilroy and everyone involved in making it. Like, they had a vision, and damn it, they are running with it. But it does almost feel like not Star Wars in a way. Like some of the tonal things are so far removed. Like, there's a part in one of the recent episodes where, like, Cyril, I think someone is watching like a soap opera, you know, trashy TV show on one of Gorman,
and it's very like Hunger Games-esque.
Yeah, which is fine on the surface, but also it's like, does this fit this universe? And like, we don't really, they're doing a little bit better with having a few more aliens, but the aliens are still very much like set dressing who occasionally show up in the background in this show.
Saving that money.
So like, you know, the fashion sense, like Gorman, I don't know what Gorman was like in any of the cartoons or anything, but it's like, it feels like very like French art deco revolution.
Speaking French?
I do not know. Someone who's smarter than us, feel free to chime in the comments.
Yeah, someone
certainly smell. If it's not French, it certainly sounds like French. And it's like, there are these choices where it's like, this doesn't quite feel like any Star Wars we've seen, which is cool, but it's all like, you know, it's got storylines about sexual abuse and about drug abuse and stuff like this, where it's like, this is,
you haven't gotten to it yet. There is full on torture. Yeah, it feels very, very different.
Torture, ironically, is the most Star Wars thing of those things I just listed. There was torture in the old Star Wars. You know, Han Solo gets tortured on Bespin. It just happens mostly off screen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're, you know, 80s and 90s USA, we're obviously much more okay with torture in movies. But yeah, so it is an interesting thing to me that this show is excellent, but it does feel like I found myself like really liking it, but not quite loving it. If that's not too blasphemous to say.
I think it tests the limits of what studios say sometimes about these giant franchises they have, where it's, they want this franchise to be like X, the everything app. They want it to be Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Marvel, the everything franchise. We're going to have a horror Star Wars movie. We're going to have a Star Wars sitcom. We're going to have a Star Wars procedural. And when you get right down to it and you make something that really is different, like Andor, like a Star Wars slow burn, as Victor says, political thriller.
Yeah.
I think it might reveal that this franchise you're working in isn't as flexible as you would like it to be. And again, it doesn't mean that the show isn't good. The show is good. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure Star Wars stretches this far. I'm not sure a lot of franchises do.
Yeah.
I think Marvel, maybe more than most, because just there were so many comics in that universe and there are so many characters and it's been around for so long and they've written about so voluminously. But Star Wars, I don't know, three movies, 25 years later, and now a bunch of new stuff. I don't think it's stretching that far, even though I do enjoy this. And yeah. Look, would it have gotten made if it had just been called Andor and didn't have Star Wars in front of it?
Probably not.
Hard to say that it would have.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting. And I don't think Disney will learn anything from this. I'm not sure anybody will. It's hard to navigate this kind of thing. We're in the age of big franchise filmmaking. So everyone has this thing on the brain. How far can you stretch it? And I think it's it for every franchise. I think it's it for every studio. I think it's it for every show, every movie. And yeah. I think we're seeing the limits of what Star Wars, how far it can stretch now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's, I'm going to still at the end of the day, just be grateful we're getting Andor, because it's obvious they really wanted to make this thing and they had something to say with it. And it's excellent for that and for many other reasons. But it is interesting, you know, normally when we talk about how far a franchise can stretch or whatever, it's like, this thing sucked and it's revealing it can't quite go the distance. So this is a really fascinating thing, because it's like, this thing is amazing, but it's also revealing just how far you can really go before it starts to feel totally detached from the thing that gave it birth.
I know, I feel weird saying it.
Yeah, yeah, it is, you know, Andor is getting widespread praise, deservedly. So it is, it's a weird to have an opinion that's like, this show is amazing. I like it, but I maybe don't love it. And it is a weird Star Wars show. You know, that I think Victor said it's the best Star Wars thing ever. And on the one hand, maybe that's true. On the other, maybe. It's so far removed from Star Wars that it's like, well, if that is your opinion, like, how did you feel about the original Star Wars? Because those are just a different beast. This is by far the most intelligent, I think, sure, Star Wars thing ever, like bar none. Yeah, subtle, thoughtful, very adult. George Lucas made movies for kids, though. Like, even at their most gruesome, most difficult to process or whatever, like he was pretty clear, like, these are kids movies, you can watch them with your kids. Andor, nah, maybe not so much, but yeah, anyway.
He also asked Victor, if they're all made by Lucasfilm, how can the same folk who made Andor make Boba Fett or The Acolyte? Which I'd say they're not all made by the same people, though. I mean, they're all made under the umbrella of Lucasfilm, but Andor is a Tony Gilroy joint.
Yes,
he has clearly approached it with a lot of care and deftness. I forget who made The Acolyte. Leslie Headland. But, yeah. She has a whole different process and a whole different way of doing things, and the shows end up being very different.
Yeah, totally. And Boba Fett kind of went the way of, we're too scared to make an actual Boba Fett show, so let's bring the Mandalorian back and kneecap our own series.
That's gotta be,
that was a corporate decision. I'm not sure I'll call
it the low point. It was the weird point of the Star Wars universe so far.
It was one of the low points, I think. It's, you know, they took Boba Fett and they basically made the Mandalorian what Boba Fett used to be, and then they were like, what? I guess, what the do we do for a Boba Fett show? Yeah.
It's gone. It can't hurt us anymore. What's next?
It is. It is. It's true. But yeah, so interesting times in Star Wars land, and I'm happy to see a Star Wars show that is being so well received. The Acolyte had its ups and downs. I was sad to see it get canceled. I wish that show got a chance to improve and really find its footing. But I also don't necessarily blame Disney for that choice either. All right. We've got one more big show to discuss. And then anything else you're watching, Dan, because I very rudely did not even actually ask you. What are you watching?
I'm watching Mythic Quest.
Are you still liking it?
I'm still liking it. Now I'm into season two. I feel like it could be funnier sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it.
It's got peaks and valleys, that show.
Sure. Also, Hacks. Oh, Hacks is really, really good. Loving Hacks.
Nice.
On Max. Everyone loves Hacks. And that about covers it. Rex cool. Gemstones coming to an end. Fun time.
Cool.
Hacks rules. Watch Hacks.
Yeah. I need to watch Hacks. I just, I'll need new shows someday soon, whenever we're through the gauntlet of television, which will be when we're dead. So the other big show, obviously, that's airing right now in the genre space is The Last of Us. Its third episode came out this past Sunday, and it was kind of the calm after the storm a little bit. kind of resetting the board, a lot of emotional scenes, a lot of wrapping up the Jackson storyline to then launch Ellie and Dina forward toward their next chapter, which will comprise the back half of the season, the back four. What do you think of this episode, Dan? You have any thoughts?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's my favorite episode of the season so far.
Better than last week?
I don't want to be that annoying guy.
Like, the battle was excessive.
I actually like the smaller, quieter episode rather than the big, explosive
give
one.
Give me Andor.
But I kind of did. Last week I was sort of annoyed by that giant battle. Okay, this had things that I love. I love group crowd scenes where folk try to convince each other and change each other's hearts. In a lot of movies, these scenes always get to me. I was way into that town council scene with making their arguments. I love people having changes of heart. I really loved the homophobic bigot coming around to Ellie's side and kind of trying to help her and also help her with her brutal vengeance, which might be a little bit shitty in there. And I saw some folk criticizing it. There was at least one article, I forget what the publication was, that kind of argued the basic thrust was that it's giving too much credence to a bigot that we're trying to redeem them. I think that's a little close-minded. I really like that in movies when someone sees the error of their ways and comes around and has a moment where they sit, but they come back. I thought that was moving. I loved the landscape photography as they're going across the country. I thought that was gorgeous. Yeah. And I loved more Ellie and Dina chemistry.
Yeah,
I really like this one. Oh, and I love Catherine O'Hara. I liked Gail, the therapist, being sassy and drunk.
Yeah, she's a great addition to this show. She's not from the games. She's a show character. I think it's a really good choice to bring her in. Just an amazing actress. And yeah, that Ellie and Dean in the chemistry, absolutely a highlight. That's like my favorite aspect of the entire season. I loved watching Isabella Merced and Bella Ramsey together. They just have amazing chemistry. I agree with you. I really liked the Seth stuff. I thought that was one of the more interesting aspects of this episode. And I do think, like, I don't agree with it's letting bigots off the hook too easy, giving them too easy a redemption or whatever. I do feel like that's a little close-minded, because The Last of Us, it wasn't just like he saw the error of his ways and now he's on board. It's like, you know, he regretted being an ass, basically. And then in this episode, it's not that he is totally coming around, it's that he and Ellie agree, you know. Like, they're the two who are like, we can't just sit here, like, we need to go after these people. So it's like, they, you know, that's actually kind of true to the character of Seth as we've seen him, which is this man who maybe is a little more forceful with his opinions, who would say something like, we need to go after these people. Like, he's not representing a paragon of the community in that way. So I think that's very intentional, that like, he's the one who stands up and says this. And that's exactly what Ellie is arguing for too. So it's like, now they're finding common ground. So it's not even
like he was her id almost in that town meeting scene. Look, and I think part of the reason it gets to me is because I feel like we live in a very politically divided world and country. I thought that's hardly an understatement for lots of reasons.
What?
I know, right? Shocker. And in politics, you need to form solidarity with people who you might not be on the same page with in every way, but you can find things that you agree on and you can unite as a group to get something done. And I think that is a useful and good and frankly moving message.
Yeah, and I don't think Seth has really been painted as a, like, his life's mission is to hate lesbians. Like, he was an asshole in that first scene we saw him in, but, like, I think it's a very believable arc for him as a character in these few episodes that, like, he said this thing, he was a jerk, he tried to make it up, it didn't really go well, and then Joel died, and Ellie is grieving this situation, and it's like, does he feel any guilt towards her, any obligation towards her? Like, I don't know the answers to these. The show hasn't spelled them out, but I think they're all very reasonable questions where it's not just like, a two-dimensional, we can be friends with the bigots type of message. Like, I think they made the, especially in that sort of closed community in a post-apocalypse where, like, sorry, you can't just say, I won't talk to this person. They're, you know, us and them is kind of the whole thing of The Last of Us, tribalism. Sure. And when a community like Jackson breaks into tribalism, that is typically when it starts to splinter in these types of stories. So I think this is all very believable and works for the story. And I thought it was a great addition because Seth doesn't get that kind of development at all in the video game. So this is another choice where they're like, we have an opportunity to kind of flesh this out and make it even better. So yeah, I like this episode too. And there are even better ones ahead. Okay, I'm very excited for people to watch.
What a lovely little discussion we've had. Should we go into the final stretch, into the Wick News lightning round, or we go over a bunch of stories we didn't try to get to the main body of the show?
I guess
20-second opinions on them.
I guess we should do that. It feels like my mouth is tired from all the talking.
You have talked a lot
today. I have. I'm sorry, everyone. But also, let's keep it to 20 seconds here as we head into the final bit.
I'm sure that'll be easily done.
Yes. All right. Dan, this first one is for you. So the estate of Joseph Schuster, who's the co-creator of Superman, sued to block the rollout of the new Superman movie on copyright grounds. But the case has been thrown out of federal court.
Yeah, you tried it, estate of Joseph Schuster. I mean, there was money on the table. I'm not going to be too mad at you, but I guess you were probably never going to win that. And now the giant Superman movie will roll out as planned. And yep. I'll probably see it. I might see Thunderbolts. Apparently it's getting good reviews, but we'll see about that. All right.
Daniel, I'm always here for your Marvel takes. Yes.
I know that you love this particular series.
Hell yeah,
Predator,
I do.
Badlands is a new Predator movie, and it follows a young Predator on a distant world. What are your thoughts?
That's right. I am so freaking excited for this movie. It's the new one from Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey, which was a total masterpiece. The Predator is the main character. It's set on an alien world. I think this is going to be rad, and it's in theaters, which Prey didn't get a theatrical run. So I love everything about this news. Hell yeah. All right. Sliding in perfectly under the buzzer. This is exciting news that just dropped today. So pay attention, listeners and viewers, because you might not know this thing and you might want to. So Cosmo Jarvis, who played Blackthorn in Shogun, he will return for Shogun season 2, and filming is slated to start in January.
And it's set 10 years after the first season. So they're off book. James Lovell's novel is done. They have a new story about Lord Torinaga and John Blackthorne working together to, I don't know, unite Japan under Shogun or something. Make it up. Medieval Japanese historic piece. First season was good. Can they make 16 seasons good without source material? I don't know, but I'll probably watch.
Yeah.
Daniel.
Yes.
Author Brandon Sanderson has a new secret project novel, and that secret project novel has a release date.
Yes. So Brandon Sanderson, he recently confirmed his book Isles of the Ember Dark, that the Dragonsteel special edition is available for pre-release, will be coming out in November-ish. And then the wider release is coming in February of next year. So we finally have a window. People backed a crowdfunding for this a while ago, so they've been waiting for news.
Cool.
I'm gonna go on a limb here and say this is the craziest news of the entire week in sci-fi fantasy land, because I can't believe this is true. So Three Body Problem seasons 2 and 3 are filming back to back, and they will be filming until 2027.
Yes. Okay. I mean, it's not as bad as it sounded, because I think I first assumed that that means it wouldn't see any episodes until after 2027. They might like film season 2 and then release it, and then film it back to back with season 3, which they'll release later. I mean, 2 years for 2 seasons, it's possible. I don't know if the show is like as high a priority. I'll watch it. Three-body problem. Ben Affleck Weiss. Sci-fi. Aliens. Yay. I'm done. Yeah. I can't talk anymore.
Okay. Speaking of aliens.
Yeah. Another franchise that you love. If only that's someone right. in a movie where those two things fought each other. Daniel, there's a TV show called Alien Earth, and the teasers hint at five deadly alien species. No.
That's right. Beyond just the xenomorph. So there are a bunch of little tiny teasers for Alien Earth, which is the FX's Alien series that's coming out later this year. I've been really, really hesitant on this one, even though it's by Noah Hawley, who did Fargo. Just great. The premise alarms me that it's set on Earth, but I like the idea that they have a bunch of different critters that are going to be running around in a forest eating humans.
Gross.
All right. Let's move from aliens to Hogwarts for a moment.
Ooh, boy.
So new Harry Potter star Papa Asaidu signed an open letter in support of trans rights. He plays Snape in the new show.
Yeah, this is a big deal. Okay, so Harry Potter, written by J.K. Rowling, who is a transphobic thought leader, like the biggest in the world, probably. There's a new Harry Potter TV show come out. There's no way all of the hippy-dippy actors they hire are going to be on board with hating trans people. And it's starting early. At least one of the main actors signed an open letter supporting trans rights. You got to wonder if that's going to cause conflict. I don't know. Like, what is it going to be like leading up? We'll see. Going to be exciting and interesting to follow. Finally, Daniel, here are the first picks of Liam Hemsworth as Geralt of Rivia on the set of the fifth and final season of The Witcher.
Yeah, so The Witcher season 4 is supposed to come out sometime this year, but they are already filming the final season. Redanian Intelligence had someone in the woods here at Surrey in Bourne Woods in England, and they took like 50 pictures. You can go look at them on Redanian Intelligence's website. Here's Liam Hemsworth. He's going to fight a bunch of knights who want him to go fight in their army, but he just wants to search for Ciri.
Clang, clang, clang with the swords. And that is our show. Thanks so much for watching, everybody. We are Dan and Dan. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. 3 in the East Coast, 1 in the mountains, noon on the West Coast. Subscribe to our channel. Leave a comment. Leave a like. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Download us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. And come back next week to see us live. Our show is welcome to people who are involuntarily celibate, people who are voluntarily celibate, and people who are getting it on 24/7. Goodbye, nice. Everybody. See you next week. Bye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.